Hey, good day. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Look at this. We're all together. We're in the same room. It's insane. We're here at the health law section for emerging trends, emerging issues in healthcare law. We're here at the American Bar Association Conference in San Diego, where Jason, Matt, and I are going to be doing a presentation at 10:15 this morning to talk about trends in healthcare fraud, waste, abuse, and compliance. One of the things that we've learned from being here at this conference is that a lot of the lawyers here are regulatory in nature and may not have a really strong understanding of fraud, waste, abuse, and compliance. So we're going to be talking a little bit about some of those issues that are out there. So it's an exciting time because obviously we don't get to often spend time together as a group. And so it's kind of nice to have Matt and Jason here with me so that we can talk about some of these issues to this greater group from the American Bar Association. So, you know, one thing that I think we want to talk about while we spend a little bit of time on this is the importance of having good consultants and good advisors in QITAMs. One of the things that we're noticing here at Advise is that law firms that are big on doing whistleblower and relator cases are finding that the U.S. attorney's offices around the country are declining the cases. We're working on, I think, 3 or 4 cases right now where the U.S. attorney's office has declined the case and the relator's counsel is seeking to take those cases on their own. So, Jason, I want to start with you because you were here yesterday kind of walking around and talking to some of the lawyers that are here. What's kind of been your impression of where some of the gaps are in where lawyers, you know, do their business?
Well, thank you, Eric. Not to correct you right off the bat, but I don't know that I would call them gaps as much as I think there are opportunities. Some of the lawyers I spoke to last night, they really didn't have a handle on some of the administrative actions that are available to the government. And certainly there's an opportunity for them, but there's also an opportunity for us to provide the kind of advice that would, you know, be relative to the payment suspensions. Matt and I both were program directors for the Unified Program Integrity Contractors, me in the West and Matt in the Northeast. And payment suspensions is the yeoman's share of the work. Secondly, is that having some real life experiences. It was, I was talking to Eric last night and I was speaking to, there are some law students here. It was really great to see that there are several law schools now that have healthcare programs as their, you know, their main thrust. And, you know, they wanted to have some experiential context, I think is what one of the young people said. And, you know, when I told them some war stories, the look on their face was like, did that really happen? And so, you know, there is good reason for that intersect between real life experience and then the theoretical practice of the law.
Yeah. So I want to just say that while you said you don't want to correct me right off the bat, I've known you and Matt for 26 years, and I think there have been corrective actions taken on me.
I am wearing the tire today.
There have been administrative actions taken against me for 26 years. And we are going to be talking about that on a LinkedIn Live in the future. We're going to talk about administrative actions and payment suspensions and the like, particularly those nuances that you and Matt both know. But Matt, you've since coming over to Advise, you've been spending some of your time working with some of our law firm clients and some of the things like that. And, I think part of what I see is one of the roles that we're playing with these law firms is educating them on the nuances of, for example, how the OIG does its investigation and where are going to be some of those gaps between a good investigation and a poor investigation. But that also percolates into, you know, things on the UPIC side, you know, like where are those, you know, things. So like where do you see, so being here, I think one of the things that we can really help with some of the law firms that are here who may be really good at doing healthcare transactional work, but don't fully understand that process, because it is a complicated, right, intricate process, right?
It is. And, you know, with the UPICs, every UPIC does things a little differently, but there is a set process that CMS lays out in terms of, you know, these are the cases that they want to see. These are the priorities. These are the administrative remedies that they want to enact, payment suspensions being one of those, probably the main one now. And this is how you get cases to the OIG. This is the format for those things. And with the law firms, we can tell them about that process. We can figure out from the correspondence that they're receiving where they are in that process, what the OIG may be looking for, may not have an interest in it based on the correspondence. We can lend a hand with that and be able to show them the best way to mitigate the actions that are going to be taken against them. Because, you know, a lot of these, you know, actions, the payment suspension, that can be devastating to a provider, especially a mom and pop shop, where they shut off their entire revenue for an undetermined amount of time. So it's in that area that we can really help, you know, be able to focus the defense on here's what we have to do. Sometimes it's falling down on the sword and just making it right up front and trying to get back to square one. Other times it's, you know, us finding the gaps or weaknesses in the UPIX or the OIG's approach that can be, you know, that can be mitigated somehow.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that that I always find to be an interesting piece of that puzzle, particularly when we're talking about payment suspensions, is the fact that the requirement to do a payment suspension is a credible allegation of fraud, and it's typically through the vetting of five beneficiary related issues. And, you know, when you kind of look at some of these and you see like, well, there was a dead beneficiary that was billed for, a beneficiary had claimed that they didn't get the services, that the number five, it's just such a small number to me. And I think that when, you know, when we talk, and, you know, we'll probably talk a little bit about them today, but when we talk about the fact that it's five what they'll call credible allegations of fraud from Benny's, that's the triggering piece of the puzzle.
It's even smaller than that. It can be five claims for one Benny. It doesn't have to be five different Bennies. It doesn't have to be five.
It's just five.
Yeah. And it's
right.
You know, I'm working on stuff right now where, you know, I looked at those five claims and the denials are very technical in nature. I didn't see a credible allegation of fraud. I saw problems with the process, with the billing, with the paperwork, but certainly not fraud.
Right.
One other reflection I just have, because I know we're keeping this short today, but the paradigm shift in the approach to the investigation and the outcomes relative to investigations is just huge. Like, so I hate to be the old guy that talks about, like, in the 80s, in the Southern and Eastern District of New York, you'd have to beg to have a healthcare matter addressed in one of those two districts, where now you come to a venue like this and you see the number of people that are specialized in healthcare law, and that there are law schools that have healthcare law programs. And you know, we are just in a much better place. Fast forward 40 years of career. So,
yeah. No, I think, and that's an important point, because, you know, if we look historically, it was a combination of prosecutors who didn't understand healthcare fraud and having to deal with explaining to a prosecutor what the fraud scheme is. And then once we got to a point where prosecutors were becoming conversant in that, it was then, well, you have a defense attorney who's really good at white collar, but doesn't know anything about healthcare. And so, you know, you're spending a little bit of time educating, you know, a prosecutor, but then when you've gotten to the point where the prosecutor is now educated, now you're spending your time educating defense attorneys. And so that, I think, works. That worked to add to why does it take so long for a case to get adjudicated, particularly when you have a defense attorney. You know, you get a client who doesn't want to listen to what their lawyer says, so they terminate the relationship, and now you've got lawyer number two or lawyer number three. I mean, I remember working cases where there'd be three and four lawyers because the defendant just kept firing the lawyers, and the clock kind of continues to reset. So I think, you know, when we look at these kind of conferences, this one, there's the Healthcare Lawyers Association, the HCCA, Healthcare Compliance Association. Like, we're seeing this tectonic shift in the ability of people to become more educated and conversant in that. But I still think at the end of the day, no matter how good they are at that, the inside information that we bring, you know, oftentimes when we're working on these QTAM projects, for example, the relator's lawyers will ask us, put on your investigator's hat. If you were looking to prove something, what would you be looking at next? Because the relator's lawyers are trying to make the strongest case possible, because the U.S. Attorney's Office has declined the case. And, you know, there may be 100 reasons why, but this kind of ongoing educational piece is I think going to be interesting. You know, today the keynote speaker is a fellow by the name of Greg Dembski, who was the essentially the chief general counsel for the Office of Counsel to the Inspector General. You know, he was the guy that set policy and set the tone. He retired out of OSIG, as it's called, and is now, you know, with a firm and is the keynote speaker. I'm interested in hearing what he has to say, because he now doesn't have the muzzle on, so he can speak a little bit more, you know, freely about things. So, you know, some final thoughts, Jason. What are you hoping that we can impart to what we think is going to be a pretty robust conversation with people, because they don't understand the OIG operational pieces of investigations or the UPICs, for example?
I think, you know, the future is more synergy. I hate to use the corporate word, but more synergy between people that have the street credibility and the street experience relative to healthcare law enforcement, and to the brilliant minds that I'm seeing here at this conference that can help defend or prosecute. You know, they're both sides of the fence here in these matters.
Yeah. Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I think Jason's right. Providing that context, providing that subject matter expertise that they might need in terms of just the boots on the ground information and knowledge set that they might lack at this point.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll be a great conference. We're looking forward to presenting today to the group here at the ABA Health Law Section on emerging trends and things of that sort. We're going to talk about, you know, the importance of data. We're going to talk about the importance of why it's a requirement to have a good compliance program. We're going to talk about some of the hot topics, the trends, which is obviously going to be DME, hospice, home health, all of those. So as always, thanks again for tuning in. This is a kind of an abridged version of our podcast. We appreciate you tuning in even for these few minutes here. Again, if you want to get up onto our email listing and get our newsletter and the like, send us an email at hello@advizehealth.com, and we'll get you signed up for that. And we look forward to seeing you on our next podcast. We also got some great LinkedIn Lives coming up in the next couple of weeks. Myself and Robert Lyles, we're doing a LinkedIn Live on LCDs, NCDs, strict liability and the like. And then we're going to be doing a LinkedIn Live and shortly after that, probably in April or May, where we're going to talk about payment suspensions and administrative action. So thanks again. Excited to have you guys here in front with me, and we'll see you at the next one.